Hello and welcome to Beatdown, a musical battle royale. I'm your Valentine, whether you like it or not, because the teacher said you have to bring one for everyone, Josh Purnell. And joining me on the panel this week, we could live for 1,000 years, but she'd hurt you, she'd make wine from your tears. It's Jennifer Lane, everybody. Good afternoon, Jennifer.
Good afternoon, Josh.
He's seeing every breath you take, every move you make, every bond you break, and every... I don't have the last one on here. He's Edward Giordano, everybody.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
And last but not least, he's a Dungeon Master. He runs a show called Dungeon Master, and I once found an erotic book called Dungeon Master, and I was going to get you for Christmas, but they didn't sell it in a print version, and that has nothing to do with your intro, but I needed a third thing. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's Mike Axelson. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks, Josh. Glad to be here.
If you heard that stony silence a moment ago, that was Jennifer's eyes rolling across the table.
I mean, it's not a show if I don't roll my eyes at Josh at least once.
That's entirely
true. In an audible.
I'm going to go look for that book now, though. I mean, I'm going to.
Okay. Well, you can download it. It's like a free download on Kindle, but there wasn't a print one, and I can't give you a Kindle book for Christmas.
Especially since I don't have a Kindle. So
yeah, exactly.
It would be a real problem.
You'd be like, thanks, Josh. I have nothing to do with this.
I'm just going to store this on my computer forever.
Forever. Yay.
You can get the Kindle app on your computer, certainly.
Ah.
Yeah, you could read
and
it
your
on
phone,
your computer.
Yeah.
We're going to make this Dungeon Master book happen.
Now, tell me a little about, to the listeners, tell us about Dungeon Master. That is the show that you put on.
Dungeon Master is a live action theater show that is role playing. So I like to describe it as sort of like Whose Line Is It Anyway meets Lord of the Rings meets the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So we put an adventure on, you know, there's a princess in a castle, and we take 6 audience volunteers and we walk them through it to the delight of the audience.
Yes.
Delight being... that's interpretable depending on the evening.
It's definitely dependent on perspective. I mean, it's improvisation, so you've all been to a bad improv show, and I'm not going to say that we haven't had one, but we've had fewer than others.
I've been a couple times. I find it very entertaining. It's very much dependent on the 6 people you pull out of the audience. Like, if they're down to play, then the show is great.
It's very key. Our last show, we had 5 new people up there.
Oh.
And one veteran who had played before, and the veteran got... killed like in the first scene, and then these 5 people just kind of slowly picked themselves off by killing each other.
Wow.
Which made for an interesting show. I mean, we didn't finish.
That's hilarious.
Sorry, princess.
Yeah, sometimes the princess gets left in the castle.
And the other great thing I like about it, your show, is that you allow the contestants to do spells, and there are really no rules on what you'll allow them to do. As long as they say it in a rhyme.
Anything they can rhyme, they can do.
And so you've actually had people, like, end the show.
And funny enough, last show, right at the climax scene, when we were going to have the big battle with the big bad guy, somebody cast a spell to go back to the beginning of the adventure.
Wow.
Which is the worst thing that can happen.
Wow.
And we totally hadn't planned for it. We're like, you want to do this again? Because I'm tired.
Yeah, it is late.
It's like 9:30. I was going to go home at 10. This is not happening.
If for the listeners, for years you told me about this, and I could not imagine it until I saw it. And so the listeners might be confused, but it is like, now that I've seen it, this all makes perfect sense. It is really a one-of-a-kind experience watching you pluck randos out of the audience and being like, we're going to put on a show, you're in the middle of it, all these people are going to watch, and they're going to catcall you, and it's just a bizarre piece of interaction.
It's very interactive. Nobody gets pulled up who doesn't put their name in. Like, they're all volunteers, so we're not like randomly just grabbing people out of the audience, because some people just want to see. Some people don't want to go up on stage and participate, but a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And it's definitely one of the most interesting theater shows I've ever been a part of.
I mean,
I've done just straight improv, and that's, you know, somebody give me a food, you know. But having people up there and just sticking an orc in front of them who's asking them a riddle, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, I have a hard time watching improv. I often describe it as watching other people masturbate.
That's a good description.
Not a super fun activity.
You're basically there for an hour to see that 30 seconds of funny.
Yeah, exactly.
That you will get 30 seconds of funny out of it every time.
Well, hopefully. I mean, yes, I've definitely been there not, but you're right. Like, you're hoping for 30 seconds of funny that they're going to accidentally stumble onto at some point.
That's sort of what it is. Yeah. I mean, it's challenging.
Yeah. I say this with the full admittance that I wasn't an improv troupe for many years. So I am part of the problem.
Yeah.
Jennifer, you were going to say something?
Oh, no. Well, I think improv can be amazing, and I've been to some really great improv, but it really just kind of lives and dies by the person, whether or not they are confident enough in their abilities to just perform and entertain versus, like, I have to be the star of the show regardless of how much fun you're having. So it really is, like, if there's somebody that is just willing to play along and have fun with it, as opposed to, like, oh no, I'm taking over now.
That's one of the interesting things about our show is mm-hmm. that when our show succeeds, mm-hmm. it is because we, the cast members, are making the six people we pull up from the audience look like rock stars. Mm-hmm. That's when the show is the best, when they are driving the action and we are just, like, pushing them to play. Like, mm-hmm. we're trying to just set them up, like, put the ball on the tee so they can hit it. That's when our show is the best. Yes.
And sometimes you have to put the ball on the tee and hand them the bat and walk them to the specific location.
Sometimes you have to hit the ball shoulders. For them, because you have to remember that there are six people who want to play and have fun, but there's 50 people in the audience who don't want to sit there and watch you think of something that rhymes with bird. That shouldn't take you that long. Yeah. You should be done now. Well, it's been a minute. Let's go.
Let's move it along.
Yeah, so we do that, you know, once a month in downtown Los Angeles at the Vortex. And you can find us on the internet. Just I think it's Dungeon Master LA or the-dungeonmaster.com.
Spoken like a true Los Angelino. You just slip that plug right in there.
Absolutely. No, people are going to ask for it.
I figure you asked me about it because you know, I might as well tell people.
Absolutely.
If somebody's like, no, he didn't tell me where to find it, I'll never know now. There could be that one person out there who's like, this is my jam.
Love
this
it.
Is what I want to do. I love theater, I love dressing up, and I love hitting people with foam swords. Where do I go?
Where do I go? That's where you go. Ed, do you have you ever been to an improv show? Do you have a history with improvisational theater?
No.
You know, Whose Line Is It Anyway is really like the perfect format for improv, because they record that for like 8 hours,
yeah,
and then they give you a half an hour show.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's brilliant.
So you get the best of those 8 hours.
Well, that's why every college kid watches Whose Line Is It Anyway and says, let's just do that. And you're like, no. They literally recorded for 4 hours only showed you the good parts. So they also know, like, there are four people on the planet as funny as Ryan Stiles and Colin Mochrie. Mm-hmm. That's why that show sucks when they're not on it. And when they brought it back Colin didn't want to come back.
Don't, like, dig on Greg Proops like that.
See, I love me some Greg Proops, but I love Greg Proops, but he was never as good as, and those two guys only when they're together.
And there was, like, always the fourth comic they brought on. You know, it's like the random person who's like, wait, I'm a stand-up. What am I doing here?
Exactly. I have no business on this stage. It was also funny that it was a British show for so long where the funniest people were the American and the Canadian. And even the British people would get a little peeved off.
What was the original host of it before Drew Carey?
He was really, really good. He was funny.
Oh, he was a funny guy.
Yeah, the original British one. Yeah. So this is called Tangent Corner. well, so we are here to talk about music. And I wanted to start off the conversation of music by asking our guest an interesting question. And I just have this written on my notes as simple: tell me about Tom Waits.
Oh, well, Tom Waits is America's greatest songwriter by far. He has the most complete American songbook besides maybe Woody Guthrie, I would say
the most songbook.
Yeah, he writes a lot of songs. Yes, yeah. Many records. And I have when we were first talking about me coming on the podcast, I was like, anytime I come on, I'm just going to bring a Tom Waits song, because there's a Tom Waits song for every situation. And maybe I didn't do that today.
Now, wait.
Threw a curveball at us.
What is your connection to him? Because Tom Waits is a hard sell for a lot of people, and I know that you deeply love him. A lot of people find his voice kind of off-putting. He's never really had a hit, except for maybe the cover of Downtown Train that Rod Stewart had. Like,
other people covering his songs is how people know of him. Like, you know, Bruce Springsteen did Jersey Girl, but you didn't know that Tom Waits wrote that song. A lot of times, he has an interesting style that does not necessarily play to the main crowd, which is why most people don't really like his songs sometimes. But the songwriting itself is just so strong. I mean, and as he got older, like in his early years, he played, you know, the drunken, you know, the piano's been drinking, not me sort of character. And he just would just write songs about being a barfly and just weird, like, sort of bebop jazz songs. But as he got older, and actually I think the thing that changed him was marrying Kathleen Brennan, when he, who was his songwriting partner, when they got married, and, you know, he's, his whole, like, it changed. And it sort of became a little bit creepier, and he started doing these sort of lyrics, and he'd sing like this, and it became a little bit inaccessible. But when you got right into the lyrics, like, and I was looking at all of his, like, his songbook for creepy love songs, especially after he got into his sort of lyrical fashion. But those songs are just the sweetest love songs that you'd ever heard. Like, if, like, I'm Still Here and Picture in a Frame and, like, all these great love songs. That
they're
just
sung by Pazuzu, but they're gorgeous.
And it's like, you know, he's like lyrics like, I'm going to love you till the wheels fall off, stuff like that. And it's just, it's like, oh, man, you really love Kathleen. You really love her. It's so sweet. And it's almost like they really love each other because they wrote all those albums together. Like, Mule Variations is perhaps one of the top 10 albums in American music history.
That's interesting you would go there.
I love that album. And
Mule Variations is listed as number 416 on 500 Greatest Albums of All Time.
I'm impressed it's even on the list. Wow.
I think it's way higher, and I think, you know, maybe time will prove it right. I understand that the music is somewhat inaccessible, but that, I mean, that won a Grammy, I believe, that year. Is that right, Ed? You're kind of looking at it right now.
give me some time.
I don't know. You seem Johnny on the spot there.
I'm exploring his Wikipedia. Yeah.
Ed, do you know anything by Tom Waits?
I don't, and that's, I was trying to put. He does have the Grammy for Bone Machine and Mule Variations.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bone Machine. That's an interesting record too. Jennifer, do you have any connection at all to Tom?
I remember him in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Do you remember him in Shrek?
Who was he in Shrek?
Ah, he was playing the piano. The Captain Hook playing the piano.
Oh my god!
Oh my gosh!
That's hilarious. Okay.
He was also in The Fisher King, one of my favorite movies of all time.
I've actually never seen that.
Yeah, he's the disabled vet who's like, he, remember the guy throws change at him and he says he didn't even look at you, and he's like, he's paying, you don't have to look.
Wow. So yeah, Tom Waits is one of those artists that I've just always known of, always recognized when I hear, but if you know, made me pick a song right now, I'd be like, I don't know. I couldn't name a single one.
Oh, well. This is going to be a real letdown, all this Tom Waits talk.
Yeah, and then we're
didn't pick a Tom Waits song.
I didn't. I tried. I tried
but
so
that's okay.
hard.
I thoroughly endorse his song.
Yeah, his song is very good. Well, before we move on from Tom Waits, what is, for listeners that are not familiar with his music, I always say to people, if you want to understand Tom Waits, or at least start, I say Nighthawks at the Diner is the record to start with. It's also largely written about norms on La Cienega, which is my favorite.
That will help you understand young Tom Waits. Mm-hmm. If you want to understand when he was transitioning into old Tom Waits, like the when he got to his Island years, I think Rain Dogs is a great place to go. And then if you want to hear like one of the greatest albums ever, get Mule Variations.
Yeah,
and listen to if this was just creepy songs, I would have picked What's He Building in There.
Yeah,
but it's creepy love songs. So the creepiest song ever written is What's He Building in There. But creepy love songs, he just doesn't have any because he's just not creepy about his love. He's very earnest about it. I figured I'd find a perfect Tom Waits song for it. Cause, you know, he's only written 788 songs or something like that. You know?
It is quite a number. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have returned on this date, the 11th of Trumpuary in the first year of the New Order, for a beatdown, wherein we choose a theme and each of us brings a song that we think is the ultimate representation of that theme. We will present our picks, make our case, and then you, the listener, will vote for who you think is the best and reign supreme in the beatdown. This week, our topic, as stated, was creepy love songs. But before we can get to that, we have to talk about last week's show. And guys, it was almost too close to call. Last week, our theme was songs about winning. I brought The Unabashed Misery Business by Paramore. Jen brought The Towering Heroes by David Bowie. And Ed brought The Victorious Victorious by Panic! Exclamation point at the disco, no exclamation point. But it was our niece Jillian who did Everything But Lose with Lose Yourself by Eminem. It was actually really tough because on Twitter, we have the Twitter poll. On the Twitter poll, Jen, Jillian, and I all got 4 votes, and Ed got 3 votes. However, Ed got a retweet which I usually count as a vote. And so that brought everybody up to four votes. So then I went over to Facebook, where we had two people on Facebook who had picked Jill. And so it was called by two votes on Facebook. So guys, if you want to vote, your vote counts. I can assure you of that.
It's funny that the week that the song is about winning, that the winning song had lose in the title.
It's totally true.
That is a fine observation.
You weren't here, but what would you have chosen for songs about winning? It's funny. Every time I look over at you, you start to pick up your coffee, and then I ask you a question, and you put down your coffee.
Songs about winning. I didn't even think about it because...
Which of these four would you have chosen as your song about winning?
I think I'd go with Heroes, honestly.
Yes. All right.
Thank you.
I think Heroes, because, I mean...
It's Bowie.
Lose Yourself is... I mean, it's Bowie, number one. Yeah. Lose Yourself is good. I think Misery Business, she wins, but later she's going to hate herself. So I think she's maybe winning that battle, but going to lose the war later.
Well played, sir. Well played. Well, our topic this week is creepy love songs, because let's be honest, there's a fine line between I love you, never leave, and I love you, you'll never leave. So we've come
that
to talk
was
about
disturbing. Right? Thank you.
We've come.
I like
talk...
how you said it right, right, Jennifer.
Just want to make sure.
Would have been creepier if you said it to me.
Glad I had a witness.
Since Jill won last week, and it was pretty much even across the board. Since Jennifer went first, I'm going to turn it over to you, Ed. And I'm going to say, would you like to take it?
So I don't even win and I have to go first? Fine. That's all right. Okay. I'm excited about this song choice. I think this is like my first pre-2000 song. So that's kind of exciting, yeah. I guess. I chose Shakespeare's Sister Stay. My relationship with the song is ever since X Factor UK Season 7, when Cher Lloyd did it for Halloween week, it was like one of the most memorable performances of that season. And that's still, X Factor UK Season 7 is still the single best reality show season ever. I mean, yeah, I could expand upon that later, but it was amazing. And Stay was a really strong breakout performance for Cher Lloyd. And I just loved it. It was like creepy. And I was like listening to it again today, I was feeling like, if you like squint your eyes and think like just like alter your perception of it, it could be like a huge Whitney Houston-esque ballad with the production value that's happening with it. But the lyrics are so like not at all something she would probably ever do. So I really like the melody, the bombast, the early 90s like balladry of it all.
Stay with me in the silence of your room, in the darkness of your dream. You must only think of me. There can be no in between when you're
love the fragility in which she, the artist, Shakespeare's sister, is like delivering the lines throughout the song. And then I just love like the demonic three-dimensionalness of it all. So there you go.
Yeah, it really struck us listening back to it just now, like how hard that turn is from the first or from the opening to the center section.
It's weird, right? Yeah. It's just all of a sudden it's like you're listening to a different song.
Yeah.
I made a joke that that's when her head does 360 total. Second exorcism joke for the day.
Hey, no one got the first one.
I did.
And Shakespeare's sister, British pop rock outfit, Irish born Siobhan Fahey, and Marcella Detroit, who's American. Do you know any of their other music, or is it really just this one song?
I was listening to something like, because I was preparing by listening to the Spotify, Turn Your Radio On came up next, and that song seemed pretty legit too. So
yeah, I mean, they were around for quite a few years.
So yeah, what is your take on this song, Josh?
You know, there's parts of this song I really like. I think the opening is so operatic. And I mean, really, the whole song is so operatic. I think that's why it works. It's amazing to me that this was such a big hit. According to Wikipedia, this was like 8 week number one in the UK.
Oh, I was
going to
say.
88.
This is the first time I've heard this song.
Oh, really?
Yeah, me too.
Swear to God.
It also has a really definitive video. This was one of those videos that early MTV played nonstop.
I watched a lot of early MTV.
I think
never
you're thinking you're
this.
Early MTV.
I mean, I lived on 120 minutes.
Yeah, but this wasn't 120 minutes.
Should have been. That was where all the weird stuff showed up.
So, yeah, I guess my read on the song is that it's a good pick. I struggle with how disjointed it is. It kind of feels like the first part and the second part are different. But when it comes to like love songs that are creepy, it is definitely a love song that turns very creepy. So I do think it's a good pick. Jennifer, what do you think of Stay by Shakespeare's Sister?
Well, this is my first time hearing it as well. And I love her voice. I mean, I listened to a lot of Kate Bush in the 80s and 90s. And her kind of like fragile but shrill voice, I absolutely love. And I do like the way it turns. And when you said it, you know, it's like, oh, it's very operatic. It reminded me, I went right to Repo. I'm like, oh my gosh, it totally could have been in Repo. And
well, she also sounds a little like Sarah Brightman.
Exactly. Who also sounds a little bit like Kate. I was just about to say that.
Oh, okay,
but yeah, I think so. I think it's a really, really cool song. It's a little, yeah, I mean, it's a little creepy. For sure. It definitely, you know, tiptoes, crosses over the line of, you know, abusive relationships. Yeah, I guess I don't have too much else to say about it. I do like the song. And actually, and thank you once again, Ed. Now this is somebody, another band that I will seek out because I would love to hear more from them.
Mike, what do you think of Shakespeare's Sister Stay?
Well, It's almost like it's two songs, like really. Mm. It's like it's a love song, and then it's
a creepy song.
It's the Space Invaders. It kind of loses me right there, honestly. When it goes to that second part, I'm like, I'm a little bit creeped out because you're like, okay, you know, what does it say? It's like, when your pride is on the floor, I'll make you beg for more. You know, that sort of like abusive relationship sort of thing. And then all of a sudden it's like, you better hope and pray you make it back to your own world. And I'm like, what are we in a different movie now? Like what happened? It's like, it just takes a complete left turn.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it stays like a love song at that point. I think it just becomes like, I almost like when the artist was writing it, they're like, this song is too pretty. I've got an idea.
I'm sure there was some like sci-fi fantasy influence happening with this, which certainly doesn't turn me off from it. and to me, like, you're hearing what you're saying is like a surprise to me, because I've only ever known the song like through the various X Factor covers and then going back and like, oh, that song's so good, I need to listen to it. So by the time I was reapproaching the song, I already knew that the twist was there. So to me, it felt natural because that's what the song is.
Yeah, the first time I was listening to it was watching the video, the actual Shakespeare's Sister video, which is, for those who haven't seen it, it's the artist is taking care of someone who's in a hospital bed and I think in a coma. She's like, stay with me, come back, don't leave me. And I saw that as being like almost sweet in a way. I mean, the lyrics are a little off, You can only think of me. You can only think of me. But and then all of a sudden, there's a big staircase, and the artist is up at the top of the stairs with a completely like space outfit on. So your sci-fi take on it was right, but comes down the stairs like Zool out of Ghostbusters. I mean, Gozer. out of Ghostbusters, and it's just like they're fighting over this. They're fighting over the coma person.
That's funny.
Wait, did she push him down the stairs?
No, he was in the bed the whole time.
Yeah, he's in the bed.
Is he in a coma because she pushed him down
Jennifer's
the stairs?
Reading into
You're
the
reading
song.
Into it. Now, the stairs just show up when Gozer does, or whatever that character is.
Maybe that's the last thing he remembers when he was falling down the stairs.
Everybody should definitely go watch the video because it is so amazing. But yeah, it's a creepy song. But for me, it's almost too pretty at the beginning. Like, the music is just beautiful. And I could see somebody recording this song and making it be not creepy. Like, you could make this song in a way, like, I haven't seen the, is it, what's Cher Lloyd? Was
Cher Lloyd, yeah.
I'm not big on my, like, I think Ed and I are opposites here, because I'm not big on the singing competition show, so I don't know a lot of them.
And Ed's not big on the Bouncing Souls, so.
I mean, it's hard to be big on music competition shows right now when there's a dearth of them, so.
Ed,
so
what?
No one is.
To you, Ed, what is the story of this song? Like, how do you interpret it?
Like, she's desperately clinging to him, and no matter what he does, he needs to bring her with her, bring her with him. There you go. Got those adverbs in the right, pronouns in the right place. And like, wrap me up in chains, but if you won't begrudgingly bring me, you can't leave me. Like, I just love the clingy desperation. I love the hyperbole. I love the melody. I feel like that's like a cohesive theme in Ed music selection is melody. So
it's a gorgeous. No, that's interesting. So in your interpretation, Ed, it's one character singing both verses. Is that right?
It's the same character.
Oh, because I mostly know it from the video where it's kind of like one person saying "Stay with me" and then another person coming in and saying "That's not going to happen."
I mean, if you interpret it as them being the same character, which I did interpret, but I'm kind of having a different reading of it now that we're talking about it. Is like she's singing from her crazy perspective, coming down the stairs to the person in the coma. You better hope and pray that you don't come back to life. Because I'm going to make your life miserable.
That's amazing.
And that, if you interpret it that way, it gets a lot creepier, actually.
You guys just made this song a lot creepier. Because the first time I listened to it, I was like, when is it going to get creepy? And then...
It's really pretty, isn't it? It's really a pretty song.
I still think she put him in the coma.
Well, Ed, you crushed it, I think, with Shakespeare's Sisters, Stay. I'm very excited about that song now. Jennifer, do you want to go next with your pick?
Sure, mine. I went with Garbage. I went with Number One Crush, and specifically the version that was remastered for Romeo and Juliet, or sorry, Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. And the song is about. It is a love song. It is an obsessive love song. It is. Deeply disturbing love song about someone who has lost all sense of self, is willing to inflict harm on themselves and other people, specifically the object of their love. And that is what I went with.
I would die for you. I would die for you. I've been dying just to feel you.
For me, and I don't know for the rest of you, but the first time I heard it was in association with the movie, which is, you know, undoubtedly one of the most beautiful but tragic love stories ever written. And it's one of those sad tales where obsessive love turns into, you know, murder and suicide. And, you know, the lyrics are pretty straightforward. I would die for you. I would kill for you. I would sell my soul for you and all these things. So the thing that's creepy to me is when, again, when love is so strong, I mean, when love is so strong that you lose yourself and your identity and you have no more control over your thoughts and your feelings. And her voice is really cool and I think really perfect at conveying that, because it's almost this sort of chanting, trance-like state that she's in, and she's just slipped into this world that she has no control of.
That's a good interpretation. One of the things about, you know, love songs and creepy love songs is that kind of fine line between a love song that is like, I will do anything for you, and
I'd
then
take
like
a bullet.
I will do anything for you. There is kind of, and this song definitely knows which side it's on. But I like how you bring out kind of the elements of musicality in it. The kind of like where she is kind of in a trance, like she's lost herself in this level of moment. My question is, how is it a love song?
She's professing her love. I mean, it is your willingness to do anything for someone you love is something people toss about. And this is come to a very deep, dark place as a result of love. I mean, it's gone beyond love. It's gone beyond reasonable love. I mean, and this is funny because, you know, just reading about it, Shirley Manson was saying that she was a little nervous when they wrote the song. They wrote the song many years before it was actually released. And she was afraid that people would be turned off by a song about a stalker. And she goes on to say that, you know, all real love is a form of obsession. And if you love someone more than anything else, that degree of exclusivity requires an abnormal amount of passion and care. But the biggest thing about, you know, deep, devoted, you know, undying love, unconditional love, is just knowing how close you can get to that line of, you know, like, yes, I will do anything for you. Will I really actually murder somebody for you? Probably not. Like, Josh, I love you, but, you know, I'm not going to start, you know, taking out hits on people. So.
Wait a minute.
I know. I think I put in my vows something about cookies and things like
that.
So,
you did,
so
yes.
We're covered. But, but yeah, so it is, it's just about keeping it, you know, just shy of truly unhealthy and unharmful to yourself or anybody else.
That's awesome.
It's interesting how in the song she never actually professes her love.
That is true.
I mean, she's always like, I'll do all these things for you. And she says at one point, violate all the love that I'm missing.
Oh.
So she's not getting love, but she never says once that I love you. Yeah. She's just like, I will do anything for you. Anything.
And the song is number one crush. So in a way, it is kind of that, like, that there is a conversation about, is it really a love song as much as it's just
an obsession song?
But your argument being that it's a love song because love is her motivation.
And love is her obsession.
It's kind of similar to, like, Tear You Apart by She Wants Revenge in a way.
That's,
you know,
a good song, actually.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I mean, the thing for me about this song that makes it less creepy is that I associate it with the movie.
Right.
And they love each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're together with each other and they feel the same way about each other.
Yeah.
And it's requited. The feeling is requited.
Oh,
and so
see,
associating the song with the movie kind of makes it seem less creepy to me, because it's just like, they, you know, Romeo and Juliet, they're just in.
Right.
They're all in on each other.
Right.
Yeah. And people don't understand, and they would do anything for each other.
And they did.
And they did.
See, and that's funny, because the reason I find the song particularly creepy is because I don't associate it with the movie as much as I associate it with Shirley Manson, who in 1996 was the most terrifying feminine presence I could imagine.
Okay, well, that's just you, because I hear her singing the song. You talked about how her voice affects you and makes you creepy. That's that's not the effect her voice has on me. I just want everybody to know that, because I'm like, oh my God, Shirley Manson. Yes, do anything for me. You and me both, right back.
I listen to this song and I'm like,
that's
I would
awesome.
Not leave with all my parts. Like,
you
would
know what?
Keep a drone.
The funny thing is, I think Mike feels the same way, but he's okay with
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
I'm like, I'm in, Shirley. Let's
take my parts.
1995 me, or whenever the song came out, was just like
96. Yeah.
96 was like, yes, yes, Shirley.
Yes,
oh my God.
Ed, what's your connection to Number One Crush by Garbage?
Okay. shockingly, I don't know garbage at all, really. But as I was going through the lyrics of this, I was just like, I feel like this is a case of show, don't tell love. Like, she's like showing, like, here's all these things I would do for you. And it's like this unrelenting obsession chant that she's just like, this, this, this. And then, of course, like, I feel like in some ways, like, Bruno Mars' Grenade is like the PG-ification of this song.
Oh, that's
so true.
Oh my gosh. I didn't make that connection.
It's two good references to good songs. Nice. Like, just Grenade and Tear You Apart. Wow, well done.
That's awesome. Wow. So,
I like it a lot. For me, I wish the melody was a bit stronger, but that's just like, that's like an Ed thing. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I like it's like unrelenting droning as well.
I think the chanting part is a creepy. When you have that repetition that just keeps going on, that really does make it.
It does. Like, she's sort of hypnotizing you as she is hypnotized.
She's definitely hypnotizing.
Yeah, there you go. I'm learning a lot about Mike today.
I had an unnatural crush on Shirley Manson.
Wow. Well, there you go.
I struggle with the song a little. It was from the Romeo and Juliet soundtrack, which was pretty much like inescapable.
Oh, yeah. It came out before the movie itself. Yeah. It was definitely
that
one
soundtrack
of those.
Is great.
It still holds up pretty well.
And it has Love Fool by the Cardigans, which caused me to seek out the Cardigans and is one of my favorite bands. Mm-hmm. Now they are mostly broken up.
It's three good songs about unhealthy love.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I almost
referenced off of this one song.
I almost brought Love Fool as the song this week just because I love the Cardigans so much, but I'm going to save it for when I can talk about like You're the Storm or one of the greatest song titles ever. The Cardigans' last single was called I Need Some Fine Wine and You Need to Be Nicer.
Sweets, man.
It's called
the subtweet. That is a subtweet.
It's so good. No, I think the struggle I have with this song is because Garbage is essentially three music producers and Shirley Manson. Mm-hmm. It feels so overproduced to me, this song. Like, oh. It feels like way too clean for how dirty the lyrics are. Mm. And so when I listen to it, I kind of just get lulled into this like, is it still on? Is this song still going?
Wow.
I kind of feel that about all Garbage songs, though. I feel like they all go for about 45 seconds too long because they don't really have bridges or anything. They just kind of are like, the sound at the beginning of a Garbage song is kind of the same sound at the end of a Garbage song. Mike is looking at me like I'm crazy.
Go ahead, Jen.
No. Go ahead.
I'm thinking about the Garbage songbook, and like all of the songs have this little sort of like undertones to them. They're all sort of like, I mean, you picked them out of the garbage or something, you know? I mean, but they're not the like Queerest of the Queer and I'm Only Happy When It Rains.
Yeah, they're all kind of sleazy.
They're kind of like down. Oh, but I can't agree that I think that they go on too long or like they just push too much. I feel like they're really, I mean, they're just well produced and I don't think that's a problem.
Yeah, and
it's Shirley Manson who's being well produced, and my God.
Yeah, and I disagree that it's, you know, all the same sound. It's sort of like a building of emotion in me. Like, so I don't feel that length has anything to do with it. I think it's just like it has this sort of like groundswell, and it's constantly building and evolving, and I'm feeling different things. So for me, I don't see it the same way. And yeah, I mean, it's like, that's when like Dirty, like Sexy Dirty was in, like you could be, you know, that person and you weren't like, oh, you're that girl. Like, no, it's like Sexy Dirty was cool. Kind of like, you know,
like grungiers were great.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's just, but it was Courtney Love era.
Yeah,
when we thought Winona Ryder, who always looked like she hadn't bathed in 5 days, was the hottest thing in movies. Well, let's move on to my pick this week. I had a really hard time picking my song this week, and I kept going through all of these songs I wanted to talk about. Love Fool was one of them. The More You Ignore Me, The Closer I Get by Morrissey. Mm-hmm. But I don't really feel like I'm the authority on Morrissey to really talk about that one. And I was talking to my coworker, David Gardner, who listens to the show, and I always know he listens to the show because he'll walk by my desk and just say something like, "You brought the Twilight Band?" And which Ed
Wait, so does that constitute as a vote? Like,
no, not yet.
Okay.
That's yeah. minus one vote. Yes. Something like that, yes. right?
I will tell you, Ed, after several minutes of conversation with David, I realized he thinks Paramore and Christina Perry are the same person. And I was like, no, relax, dude. It's okay.
Okay. I was like, but they're not the same person.
Yeah, exactly. We know that.
Yeah.
But so he and I were throwing songs back and forth. And he was like, well, why don't you just do that wedding song that everybody uses that's actually really creepy? And I said, what song are you talking about? And he goes, U2's With or Without You. And I go, well, but that's not a creepy song. That's a love song. And he goes, have you actually listened to With or Without You? And so I did. And I went, okay, yeah, I have to talk about that song just simply by nature of how I came to it. So there's nothing I can really say about U2. I mean, it's Bono, The Edge, Larry Mullen Jr. on drums, Adam Clayton on bass. They were formed in Ireland in 1976 as kind of like a post-Clash, like punk rock band. They pretty much conquered the world in 87 with the Joshua Tree. You know U2. The one thing I will say about U2 that I find kind of fascinating about them is they've been at the forefront of music for like 40 years. Like since Joshua Tree, U2 have been inescapable. And they're kind of special in a way that they've never dramatically changed their sound. With the exception of maybe like the industrial years around Zooropa and Achtung Baby, they mm-hmm. still have always sounded like U2. Like they didn't yeah. have their crappy pop years like the Stones did in the 80s. They didn't have their crappy love song years like the Stones did in the 90s, really the Stones. And they've also never been a band that like broke up. Like it's amazing mm-hmm. to think that U2 has never lost a member.
Yeah.
They've never had a member be like, I'm going to go on a solo tour for 2 years. Like that's never happened. There's not a lot of bands you can think of that have stayed so consistent as long as U2 have.
To that counterpoint though, if you don't like the donut they're selling from their bakery and they never change up their donut, you're never going to that bakery.
I know a lot of people like that. That's a good point.
And that's exactly what my next note was. I actually don't like U2 that much for that exact reason.
Why would
reason,
you pick a song from a band you don't even like?
Because let's get into it. I agree
it
with you 100%, Ed. I kind of feel like they've been doing the same song for all these years and I don't particularly love that song. But I was looking at With or Without You, and I was just like, let's talk about how strange this song is.
Twisting your side, I'll wait for you. Sleight of hand and twist of fate, on a bed of nails she makes me wait, and I wait. Without you, with or without you, with or without you. Through the storm we reach the shore. You gave it all, but I want more. And I'm waiting.
One of the things about With or Without You, it's kind of like the U2-iest U2 song. Like you've got Bono's big dynamic vocal range where he starts real kind of whispery and low, and then he has his big yodels after the hook. His lyrics are like slightly nonsensical. I'm actually reading a book about the Spider-Man musical right now, about the making of the Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark musical that Bono and The Edge wrote the songs for. And they call his lyrics Bongolese. That's actually a name that the band uses. So you've got The Edge's like long sustained guitars, which, you know, have like 12 pedals on everything. You got Clayton's bass line, which is just like metered and perfect. And you've got the drums, which always sound like a drum machine. And I'm not saying anything nice about U2 right now, but let's look at this song for what it is. Is it a love song? I mean, it has all the markers of a love song. It sounds like a love song. You have those that sustained guitar riff that's like clouds parting. I mean, it's practically religious. Like, all of U2's songs sound kind of like gospel music. You've got Bono's massive commitment in this moment and these lyrics like, he'll wait for you, you know, through the storm we reach the shore. Like, these are also so markers of love songs. Like, he can't live without you. But he also can't live with you. That's why I'm like, this song kind of hit me where I went, wait, I've never looked at it from the other side before. And then when you start looking at it really deep, like, this is a song about a terribly abusive relationship. I mean, the other person in this song, they change their mind on a twist of fate. They make him wait on a bed of nails. They're beating him, apparently. He's battered and bruised. Like, he's all over it. And then the refrain, that you give yourself away line, which I guess I'd never really thought of, but I think he's being cheated on, and like, cheated on a lot. And so then I start kind of going through it. The piano in the background, that kind of ding, 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 which goes through. It's like, kind of creepy when you take it on its own. The guitar riff, like, I swear the guitar riff is slightly off key. When he gets to the hook, like, when you give, and the guitar riff does this like bow, that's kind of like an attack on the song. And then Bono's yodels, like, are they screams of joy, are they cries of pain? Like, you could totally go with this song in two different directions. And so this song is sneaky. This song is not about a stalker. This song is the stalker. And that's why I was like, With or Without You, which sounds so much like a love song, has all the markers of a love song, and is really pretty dark. That is why I brought With or Without You as U2's creepy love song. Mike, you could not look more skeptical.
First of all, you know there are other books out there. You don't need to be reading a book about Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Oh my God, it's so interesting. No, no. It's so interesting.
I refuse to accept this at all.
Jennifer and I saw Turn Off the Dark in New York, and we just walked it. We literally went to the gift shop, and I walked over to the guy running the gift shop. I was like, tell me everything about this shit show. And he just told us stories.
It's like reading any book about like a failed movie or something like
too
that.
Too tangential right now, but yes. Oh my God. Secondly, this is the fourth place finisher this week. I mean, this is not a good choice. This song is not as creepy as Stay or as Number One Crush. It's just not. It's almost like this song was like you two got in a room and they're like, you guys want to write a hit? All right, so let's put together all of these hit making things and then boom, we're done. It's like, oh, we made a hit. Yay, let's all go wear leather jackets.
They did
weird.
Make a hit. It was
yeah,
a
and
huge
that's just
hit at
it's
the
just
time.
Kind of what I think of when I think of you too. It's just like, this is just, you know, them just writing a song.
They're
I don't think there's
factory.
I don't think when they were writing the lyrics, they were like even thinking about it. They're like, what rhymes with bed of nails makes me wait? Nothing. All right, we'll just start chanting something.
Yeah.
Give yourself away. Yeah, sounds good. We're done. We're done here. You know, and it's just kind of it's just there. Like most U2 songs, it's just there.
But I mean, I want to fight you because it's my job on the show. because I do feel like when you're thinking about a creepy love song, it is a love song. Like, I think this song functions as a love song.
I agree.
Everything about it. It's just that when you look at it from a slightly different angle, or not even that slightly different of an angle, when you look at it from the angle the song presents you,
I mean,
it's really discouraging.
No, man.
See, To make it worse,
I believe that Bono created the song as a way to, like, somehow have a hit and somehow also create sympathy for himself. Like, oh, look at me. I'm so broken and battered and bruised.
Yep.
Sympathize with me. Oh, and also I'm hella loaded and not doing anything that exciting.
Well, Bono is like one of the great international leaders of, I mean, I can't believe I'm defending Bono. I'm just going to move on.
You can defend his humanitarian work all you want.
Exactly,
you cannot
yes.
defend this song.
Yes.
Jennifer.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, I agree pretty much with everything said. It is a sneaky love song because it does have all of, you know, it was manufactured to sound like a love song, but it's Yeah, I mean, I guess I never really thought with or without you, I can't live. And yeah, so it's a little sad and twisted, but...
I think people hum the song to themselves when people don't, like, put clothes in the laundry in the hamper, you know? It's like, oh, I can't live with you. Just,
it's the wait music when you're calling your health insurance.
Don't disparage laundry music like this.
Now, we all know somebody has this as their wedding song. Like, nobody has number one crush as their wedding song. Someone has this as their wedding song.
Okay.
That's fine.
I've been to a lot of weddings. And I've heard some pretty bad wedding songs.
Yeah, there's lots of people who are getting married who have bad taste. Like, this is not
Don't listen to the words.
Or just not that imaginative.
What's my favorite, Jennifer? Your friends married. Oh, and their song was?
Loving you is easy because you're beautiful.
Is that the only reason?
Otherwise, it would be hell, apparently. Oh, no, I've been to some horrible ones. Oh, my gosh, what was the other one? Oh, I knew a couple, Somewhere of the Rainbow. Another one, the Barbara Streisand version, not even in the Judy Garland, Somewhere of the Rainbow. And it was a straight wedding. Another one was Kiss from a Rose by Seal.
Wow. That's the word.
Nobody even knows what those words mean.
Somebody we know... I don't know who I know this, but somebody's wedding song was Kryptonite by Three Doors Down, which I think was like, that was dated 30 seconds after it came out.
That's a choice.
That we song went was to overplayed. That wedding together.
Did we go, was that at a wedding we were at? I don't remember. I just remember that was a wedding song that I heard once.
This conversation is giving me new appreciation for Ed Sheeran's Thinking Out Loud, so that when people who don't have creativity want to pick a song, they at least have a good song to turn to now.
Yeah, that's right now they say that's the number one first dance wedding song is Thinking Out Loud by Ed Sheeran.
What?
Well, that and ours is up there.
Ours was up there too. Yeah. That's become a late bloomer.
Which, well, I mean, it's less than 10 years old.
Which song was it again?
Our song was You're the Best Thing by Ray LaMontagne.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And your song was, I don't remember.
I Want You by Tom Waits.
Oh,
wow. Yes.
Which is weird.
Which is weird because we'll get into it. Actually, does anybody else have anything to say about With or Without You before we move on?
Chills.
All right. Well, then let's go ahead.
That sucks.
I think this is Josh's attempt to say that, oh, look, I can come in last.
Yeah, he's sandbagging.
What?
Like 100% all right. Sandbagging.
Josh wants to go last next week.
I brought a very good case for this song.
You always sell the heck out of it.
Oh, you sold it, but I mean, we got it home and we realized it didn't have an engine. There's no wheels on it. I'm like, what is this he just gave us? This is a terrible. I'm taking this back.
All right, guest with the benefit of going last. Mike, what did you bring for our creepy love songs beatdown?
Well, as I just said, my wedding song was actually a very sweet song by Tom Waits called I Want You. And the song I chose for this is called I Want You by Elvis Costello. Things about this song that make it creepy are everything. It is perhaps, I don't know, maybe the creepiest song I've ever heard outside of What's He Building in There. It's just, you talk about unrequited love. And, you know, that can be sad. Or it can be just terrifying when that person will not stop talking to you and coming after you and professing their love and they just won't stop. I have some notes on it here that I would like to share with you. One of the people who recorded it said it's among the nastiest songs he has ever recorded, both lyrically and musically. And I think that's an important part of that. A lot of the songs that we've been hearing today are really, really, they have, the music is just so pretty and like, and well put, like the number one crush is so sexy and the music is just like, oh, ah, and it's just driving, you know, and Stay, that it's so operatic and beautiful, and With or Without You is a piece of crap.
But it's a pleasant piece of crap.
It's a number one hit piece of crap, you know, that sort of thing. It's like we've made a perfect pie that everyone in the world will eat.
It's engineered to like make just hug your ears.
Yeah, but you listen to I Want You and it starts off like just a little like acoustic little pretty thing, and then all of a sudden it just comes in with this twang of dissonant notes, and then it just starts driving. And just driving. And it's similar to Number One Crush in that way, in that it just keeps repeating the same thing over and over and over again. And actually, with all the songs, they kind of do repeat, have that chanty thing, which kind of makes them creepy, like Stay Had It, Stay With Me, Stay With Me, Stay With Me, you know? And that, I think that's one of the things that makes things especially creepy, is when you're just like saying the same thing over and over again. I remember a really funny episode of Saturday Night Live back in, this is probably the 80s or 90s, early 90s, when Christopher Walken was on, and they had this show called Stock Talk, which is a funny skit if you're not triggered by stalkers. And
hopefully not.
Rob Schneider's character, like, said, just starts saying, he'll never love you like I love you. He'll never love you like I love you. He'll never love you like I love you. And so I think the repetition, the dissonant notes, just the way it's all put together, and how you can all kind of identify either with the singer of this song or with the person who it's being sung to. At some level, we've all like either been like had that love that's been unrequited, and we just don't understand why it's not there, and or why, you know, this person will just not go away. Please just go away.
Oh, my baby, baby, I want you so it scares me to death. I can't say any more than I love you. Everything else is a waste of breath. I want you. You had your fun, you don't get well no more. I want you, your fingernails go dragging down the wall. Be careful, darling, you might fall. I want you. I woke up and one of us was crying. I want you. You said, young man, I do believe you're dying. I want you. If you need a second.
I looked up this song on Wikipedia, as I always look up all the songs. And in the liner notes to the Girls, Girls, Girls compilation record, Elvis Costello wrote, "The sound of this track was always going to be the aural equivalent of a blurred Polaroid. So no apologies on the lack of fidelity. None are needed. It's just a pornographic snapshot, lots of broken glass, a squashed box of chocolates, and a little blood on the wall."
And that's what it sounds like.
I was like, argument. Argument ended. Yeah, that's amazing.
It's a pretty great song. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it. What I find especially like creepy about it is that, it, like, he's clearly had a relationship with this person, and that person has moved on, and he absolutely hasn't. It's like, you know, having an ex show up to you and be like, "So you're seeing this new guy, huh? What does he do for you that I didn't do for you? Could you just tell me? Like, I want to know. Like, let me know. Tell me what I can do to be like him so that you will love me."
That's always one of those innocent questions. Like, in your brain at the time, you're like, no, this won't turn out poorly.
And it,
and it always
so
does.
Wait,
they're not just asking so that they'll better themselves for the next relationship because they've moved on?
No.
No.
No, they want
to
get
good
you
to
back.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I listened to this version of it, obviously. And also, like, there's a cover version with Elvis Costello doing it with The Roots.
Oh, wow.
And there's also a Fiona Apple cover of this song.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And
oh, yeah. I can
every
see her.
Time you hear it, it's always creepy. Like, it doesn't matter who's recording it. It's like you can't record this song and have it be sweet. There's just no. I can't see it, and I've looked for versions that were sweet, and there just aren't any. This is just all about, I am watching you, and I have known you, and I don't want to know you again.
In a biblical way.
Yeah.
Ed, do you know this song? What are your thoughts on I Want You by Elvis Costello?
Shockingly, do not know this song. but I was digging into it as we were listening. I was like, ooh. I like the groove. I feel like it's good. I like there's like a switch up, like where it gets like more intense midway through. And the description that he laid out was in the liner notes was pretty solid. I was like, yeah, that sounds like it. It's a really good song.
there's an interesting aspect of Elvis Costello that he's actually pretty astute talking about his own music, which is a lot of musicians, they're kind of like, I wrote the song, and then you ask him about it later and they don't have anything to say about it. Elvis Costello almost always has something good to say about the song.
Yeah.
We saw him live with the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra.
That must have been great.
It was so fun.
He's fantastic. I mean, his voice, his lyrics, like just, he just lives and breathes every song and you just feel it. And I've always been a big fan. I've never heard the song, which is shocking to
me. You should look up this album. It's called Blood and Chocolate. And strangely enough, it's called Blood and Chocolate.
Yeah.
And the entire, most of the songs on it are about, I'm pretty sure it's about infidelity. Like, he must have just gotten out of something that didn't go well, because outside of Tokyo Storm Warning, which is just a weird song, every song on that album is just like, you left me, and now here I am. And some of those songs are happy about it. There's obviously songs that are sad about it, and there are songs that are just questioning it. And the entire album has like this entire drive to it that's trying to examine it. And I think that's kind of, it's an interesting album. Not a lot of people know about it, but I think it's one of his best personally. Everybody knows My Aim Is True and Armed Forces.
Of course.
Spike.
Yeah. But, but when he was with the Attractions playing this album, I think it might have been his last album with the Attractions.
That sounds right.
Before he did The Imposters, I think, or just went solo.
And what year is this?
This is 1986.
86. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
1986. And it's like you think of Elvis Costello and you think of Allison, you think of Veronica, you think about Radio, or Pump It Up, or, or you know, What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding. But he's got a whole other side to him.
Yeah.
That is apparently terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with this song is there's no room for interpretation. It's all out there on the page. And he sings it with such pain and intent. It's really disturbing.
Yeah.
My favorite Elvis Costello story, he was on, he was the guest on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR, where they'll have a guest come on and they call him on the phone and they do like a short interview and then they play a game with him. And usually they get people that are like really excited, like this is their break being on NPR, but they've got Elvis Costello on the phone. So halfway through the interview, you hear him go like, hang on one sec. What? Yeah, pasta. Yeah, no, that'd be good. Maybe a salad? Awesome. Thanks, dear. Sorry, that was my wife. And it was so great that, like, Elvis, that like that's a rock star. Where he's like, sure, I'll be on your national radio show, but I still got to get work out dinner plans with the wife.
And apparently she makes dinner, which is that's adorable.
Yeah.
I just picture the two of them eating together now.
Yes.
That's so cute.
Ed, do you have any, like, do you know Elvis Costello at all?
No. I need to know more.
We need to put together like a primer. Elvis Costello is a fantastic songwriter.
I've offered to you today two of the greatest songwriters.
This is
Tom Waits and Elvis Costello.
My college,
I can tell you right now, you'll like Elvis Costello more.
You definitely will.
Well, let's go around the circle one last time. This is our opportunity to take the gloves off, which I don't have to tell Mike to do, because you texted me before the show and you were like, I'm going to bring the thunder. And I was like, okay, let's go. We'll go around the circle one more time and everybody will make one last final case for their song. Ed, you were at Shakespeare's Sisters Stay this week. Please tell us one last time why it is the ultimate creepy love song and why everyone else should never be allowed to listen to music again. They should have to sit in a closet by themselves.
Everyone should listen to music again. But but the reason Shakespeare's Sister is a contender, a viable contender this week, is like the drama, the hyperbole, the gravitas of the whole situation. I don't know. I like the melody just grabs you, and it's so pretty and so fragile. And I just feel like it's like a sweeping soundscape of amazement that you just want to be like wrapped up in chains and taken with him. There you go.
That's awesome. Jennifer, your last case for number one crush by Garbage.
I'm going to rest on Shirley Manson's dirty, sexy, sultry, obsessive love ballad.
I want to rest on that too.
I got one vote.
That was awesome. I saw Mike.
I'm like,
you said rest on, and I watched Mike go to the microphone and be like, I'm going to crush this.
I said it. He spiked it. Love so obsessive that you know, willingness to bring harm on oneself or someone else.
Well, I am going to make one last case for U2's With or Without You, and I'm going to tell you why.
Please do.
Okay.
Please.
U2's With or Without You. Look, of all these songs, U2's With or Without You is the only one that if you just heard it in passing, you'd be like, that is so sweet. What a nice sentiment. And it's the one song that when you like really get into it, it is two things at the same time, and that's why I believe it is the best love song of the four songs, and by that turn also a creepy, very creepy love song. Mike, final closing words. I love the looks I'm getting from you. Final closing words on Elvis Costello's I Want You.
Well, it's the creepiest song about love that I've ever heard. It is knowing someone and then them rejecting you, and then you just wallowing in that rejection and wondering why, and following that person around and asking them why, and just repeating to them that I want you, I want you, I want you. Why don't you want me back? What is this? And it's that, and combined with the music of it as well, which is not, you know, the fluffy pop of U2.
Fluffy pop.
Really, pick
it's
any
a new category.
Pick anything but U2's With or Without You. That's really my closing argument.
That is a solid argument.
I love that you went out drinking last night, and if you were to be here with your regular voice, I think it would be far less creepy when you repeated "I want you, I want you, I want you" three times just a moment ago.
That's the entire end of the song is "I want you every night when I go off to bed. I want you, and when I wake up, I want you. I'm gonna say it once again till I instill it. I want you. I'm gonna feel this way until you kill it. I want you."
Okay, you're creepier than the song right now.
Like,
and the song is
into my chair.
Yeah, all the listeners are like, "What just happened?" This is
creepy. Yeah.
Well, now, dear listeners, it is up for you to vote for which of our songs is the best creepy love song that you heard this week. You can vote on Twitter by tweeting us at BeatdownPod. You can email us at BeatdownPodcast@gmail.com, or you can tell us on Facebook at Facebook.com/BeatdownPodcast. I know some people have said, "Hey, I don't have Twitter or Facebook," in which case you can email me, and also congratulations to you. I'm actually kind of envious. And let us know what you think is the ultimate creepy love song, and it goes without saying you'll want to tell us all of the many creepy love songs that we forgot to mention. We'll be back next week when our theme will be songs from 2016. We could call it songs from last year, or we could call it songs from the last year. I guarantee I'll tell that joke again next week. Mike, if people want to follow you on the social media,
if they
want
to stalk you,
if they
want
to, if
because
they
now
want
they
you,
want you,
oh, they should,
and they should definitely not do that.
I
because
mean,
Vanessa they, will cut a bitch.
Vanessa will cut a bitch. Hey, baby, how are you? I'm sure she's listening.
Are you on the social medias? Would you
I am. You can follow me at Twitter at Mikey Axelicious.
How do you spell Axelicious?
AXELICIOUS.
All right,
Mikey Axelicious.
Axelson, the greatest last name of all people.
It's pretty. Being called Axe is pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie.
There's no downside to
that. Built-in nickname. Yeah.
Yeah.
Considering there's so many Mikes in the world, being able to just call me Axe.
Jennifer, if people want to follow you on the social medias, how would they do that?
On Instagram and Twitter at JennyBCreative.
And Ed, if people want to follow you, where should they go?
All the places at Edward Giordano, obviously.
I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at Josh Burnell, BURNELL. And that is it for us. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Thanks for bringing the thunder this week, Mike.
Thanks for having me. It was a great time.
We will talk to everybody next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Beat Down is a production of us, and it is recorded in Studio O, the office attached to our garage. Our theme song is Optimism by the Numbers by Brian Lerner, and thanks to him for letting us use it. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on iTunes. It helps others find the show and spreads the word that I can go on way too long about anything when given the opportunity. The music clips we discuss in this podcast are used in compliance with the U.S. Copyright Act Fair Use Exemption for Criticism and If you want to listen to the songs we talked about this week in their entirety, visit us on Twitter at BeatdownPod, online at BeatdownPodcast.com, and on Facebook at Facebook.com/BeatdownPodcast.